It's great to be a nerd. It's great to be a nerd. The only light we ever see is from our monitor.
We argue about comic books and internet connections. The biggest highlight of the year is the Star Trek convention.
Our turn wasn't big enough to sign up any stars. But we much better Richard, who was phased by a Borg.
Ben,
he knew Mr. Sulu.
What?
It's great to be a nerd. It's great to be a nerd.
All right, welcome to Nerdcast episode number 24, where nerds gather and we discuss news stories, we discuss good news, we discuss business tactics about what it is to be a nerd and what you might want to find out that it takes to become a nerd. So this is for nerds on the Nerds On Site team or for wannabe nerds. And my name is David Redekop, and I'm a co-founder. And I just realized, Chris, we've never actually introduced myself before, but I introduced you guys. But I guess there's...
we could all introduce you now.
Oh, there we go. No, never mind. Speaking of that voice right there, you just heard. That was Arthur, our producer. Good to have you, Arthur. Couldn't do this without you, you know that. Glad to have you. Yeah, you're right. We could do it without you. Just not as good, right?
Yeah.
And we got Arthur and I are from Canada. Dennis, good to have you from West Virginia, US of A. He was here in person last week, so we know Dennis is for real.
Yes, I'm for real. Glad to be here.
You did a really nice road trip, too. That's great. And Chris Allen, we missed you at the Pod Leader Advance last week, but I know you participated remotely. Good to have you, Chris, from the UK.
Thanks, David. Hi, everyone.
And we, as always, start the Nerdcast with good news. Just because bad, brown, smelly stuff happens in life, no matter how you look at it. And when it comes to the good stuff, we have to draw it out. We have to think about them. And this is just a discipline that we have as nerds all around. So whenever we do get together, we start out by sharing the good things that may have happened, should have happened in the past week or so. And by the way, I miss my caffeine. The caffeine, the little application, it hasn't been brought forward to this profile. So my screen just dim. So I have to fix that next time. But anyway, I'm going to start with good news and we'll go down the list. A couple of good things happened in the last 7 business days. First, we had Pod Leader Advance. So we had pod leaders from around the world get together here in London, Ontario. And we just had a great, great time. And a good chunk of them were making comments at the end of it like, best Pod Leader Advance ever. And many of them had been to several of them. We have one once a year where we literally come together and talk about leadership issues, what it takes to bring in new clients, what it takes to bring in new nerds, you know, how we can do business better. And just excellent ideas came up. And the best one, I think the highlight, was Brian Bell saying, hey, everyone's got a UPS driver in their neighborhood that you've seen once or twice. Those guys know other businesses. Build a relationship with a UPS driver and find out who in the area may have technical challenges or may be in a position to be looking for an IT team. And wow, how brilliantly simple was that? So I already know of people who implemented that suggestion right away and are doing that right now as we speak, building relationships with the local courier, whether it's UPS, FedEx, whoever it may be. And that was a really exciting, just simple idea that came out of that. Another piece of good news I have to let you guys know about is that, you know, I'm not sure that I still am a KISS fan, but Masterful Blair Diabru, who not only recognizes people when he meets them in airports, but comes up to them and talks to them and then ends up having an ongoing relationship with people that he has met, you know, somewhere in the world, ended up arranging a meeting with the Gene Simmons with us and for us on Tuesday. And so he came in London for a KISS concert at the John Labatt Center. And what did he do? He arranged for us to meet with him. We had 15 minutes originally, just as a touch base, and, you know, Blair's idea was to get Charlie and Gene talking to each other. And the 15 minutes turned into an hour and 20 minutes. And I pulled out my little flip minnow, and Charlie says, how much to record this? Because he was autographing some posters there that people were paying, you know, $1,000 for, just to get a picture and an authentic signed poster. So we figured, oh, for sure, to video this little get-together is going to be costly. But he allowed us to record it. He is a masterful business guy. Absolutely brilliant. So I want to publicly thank Gene Simmons for the opportunity to meet with him and let him know that we appreciate it and will always appreciate the business lessons we learned in having that encounter with him. So that's my good news. Sorry. Sorry, you may not be able to top it, any of you, but I had to share it. All right, Arthur, your turn.
Okay. Well, I'll try my best to top it, but we're working on a new First Step video for all those who are coming into Nerds On Site. Michael Merrill from Texas and myself are working on it, so that should be ready shortly, and that'll be good. That'll definitely be good. But, yeah, I'm not sure if that quite tops David's good news.
Oh, I think so. The flags that you see behind me, thanks, Arthur, for organizing those. We actually had all the flags of all the countries lined up in the coffee office, and they're part of the First Step video. So we've already done the recording, now just doing the edits. It's gonna be great. Nathan says he can't hear you. Oh, but everybody can, so. Okay. All right, I forgot. You're watching the chat, so I'll leave it with you. Good stuff. Great good news. Dennis, you're next.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, whether you like KISS music or not, you have to say they have a great marketing plan.
Absolutely.
Well, it's hard to not do good news around the Pod Leader Advanced, so that was great. And it was great. You know, I actually got to meet some people that I had not met in person before, even though I worked with them pretty extensively. And that was great. Got to figure out why everyone looks up to Mark Kemp, both figuratively and literally.
He's our 6'7" senior software developer that Dennis is talking about. Yeah. And yes, we do look up to him in more than one way.
That's right. I walked in the room and he stood up and I'm like, whoa.
Watch your head. Watch your head. 8-foot ceilings and he's almost hitting it.
Yeah. Yes. But no, that was really great to get together with people, and it was actually very productive. A lot of serious work got done.
Good stuff. Good to hear. And Dennis has done lots of background work behind the scenes in re-implementing our own data center environment in a much more structured fashion. And very excited personally in the progress that's been made and what's still coming in the coming months, as well as the security team that we've talked about a couple times here on Nerdcast. And, of course, always willing to talk further. But formalized security services coming from a team headed up by Dennis, not just himself, but he is certainly the champion of that team. So really glad to see that come to full production status, Dennis. And Mr. Allen, good to have you back. We missed you at a couple of Nerdcasts, but glad to have you back.
Yeah, thanks, David. My good news is we've decided to start offering Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube account creation and branding as part of our optimization and online presence improvement service. So it's a useful thing. We're seeing more businesses using video now for promotional and informational videos. So it seems like a good idea to encourage them to cross-post and generate some engagement with their customers.
That's fantastic, Chris. Absolutely necessary. We've just been talking at the leadership level within Nerds On Site, but this applies to businesses everywhere around the world, I believe, is the role of someone who is a social media steward. And every organization needs that structured approach now. I mean, just like everyone needs a bookkeeper or a lawyer, an accountant, and so forth, now you need a social media steward. Someone who, just like Chris described, is then helping with the social media on the social media fronts and keeps that branding, that public branding, in a unified fashion. That's excellent. That's excellent, Chris. That should be a... That should be a distribution email and good news on a regular basis so that nerds know that they can just send them to you. And I'm assuming that you're working with Diego on this as well.
Yep.
Doing this as a team.
It's an integral part. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. Excellent to know. And David Everett, I believe that is, on line. Good to have you, David. Just had a great Skype chat with him this morning. Good news is best month ever as a nerd. Yeah. We don't have a pod leader. Good news. That's fantastic. Congratulations, David. And not only that, but he is absolutely focused on building the right kind of long-term business with our RAF product. So excellent, excellent series of good news. We have a number of articles to discuss. We may not get to all of them today, but we will certainly get to some of them. By the way, we're missing Rob from Down Under. Hope you're doing all right, Rob. We miss you. So we'll get some of the links that you submitted to next week. But I think you submitted this one, Dennis, called Secunia Personal Software Inspector. We hadn't really talked about this one at length, but did you want to make some comments about this one?
Well, yeah, we've actually talked about it over the last year or so, but we've never talked about it on the podcast.
Right.
It is a great program to survey the applications on your computer, look for applications that are outdated or need to be patched or may have security vulnerabilities, and then it provides you links to the updates for those. Increasingly, the vulnerabilities being exploited are not in the operating systems themselves, but rather in the applications, especially applications that may be related to web browsers, web plugins, or any application that opens files that you can download from the internet. So this is a great way to just keep an eye on those programs. It does periodic scans, and something we've looked at over the years, but we've never talked about on the podcast.
Good to know. We should definitely be more concerned about this one. I think that GRC or Security Now also covered this at one point, right? Or at least had a mention of it?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. So you recommend that at least nerds should be running this, Dennis?
Yeah, I do it, and it does a great job of going through and finding all the programs that need to be patched. And as I said, it's very easy because it gives you the links to the patches right within the program.
Oh, I see. So I wonder if it covers anything that Microsoft only covers their own, right? Microsoft has that security assessment tool that you run. And in fact, nowadays, software such as the BlackBerry Enterprise Server will have you run that software first to make sure that you've got all your vulnerabilities patched first. This probably just focuses on that as well as non-Microsoft-based programs, I assume.
It has a very extensive database of non-Microsoft programs. It really goes through very thoroughly and finds things that need to be patched.
Good to know. Thank you for that submission. And I think the next one that we have here, you also submitted Paradise Lost, Malware Targets Max. In fact, this one I did, not necessarily this very article, but I did alert Charlie and John and Blair to the fact that an exploited Mac is now worth 43 cents.
Which, no, it was 45 cents, right? Or maybe it's 43.
Wow. Either way, that's a lot more than a PC. What's a PC? Around a penny and a half? I remember checking some time ago. So yep. We're definitely talking about, and it all makes sense, right? Didn't we talk about how the premium laptop market, which is any laptop over $1,000, Apple has a 90% market share? So it would make sense that if you were to target Macs, you'd be targeting a more high-profile user, right?
Well, yeah. The other thing is that Mac users have become a bit complacent about malware because it's just not been an issue that we've had to deal with much in the past. So I think that Mac users tend to not be quite as vigilant as the PC users.
Right.
Yeah, it's good. It's a great bonus. But once it's gone, you need to be careful.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys had a chance to listen to last week's Security Now, but it's the first time where Steve Gibson went as far as to say that we have approached a time when the Mac is no longer more safe than Windows, purely from a vulnerability perspective. Not necessarily yet in terms of malware that's out there taking advantage of it, but if you just look at the history in the last couple of weeks of the number of patches and what kinds of patches have come to the Mac operating system versus what has come for the Windows operating systems, wow, they look very similar. As far as vulnerabilities, there just hasn't been as much of an exploit. And I think it is a good warning for us to take seriously. I'm sure Jeff will actually, it looks like there is a comment there. Jeff, I know, is a Mac expert. He says, for Mac, there's version tracker and Mac update, a widget called App Update. So probably in reference to the previous article on the Secunia, And he also says there still have been no malware for Macs outside of labs, like no malware in the wild. Right. But that's, that, again, the key word is yet. Right, Jeff? And I do think we need to be careful that we are aware that, you know, strictly speaking, from a vulnerability perspective, we're not that much more safe any longer than the Windows side. All right, so we'll move to the next one here, which you also submitted, Dennis, about malware worldwide growing to 15% in September. Wow.
Wow, yeah, and well, you'll have to, if you look at the statistics here, you'll see that the PC owners are still a lot worse off than the Mac owners. I was actually shocked. In the U.S., according to Panda, 58% of computers have some sort of malware on them. And the U.K. and Australia and Canada are not far behind, hovering at about 50%. And, you know, if you look at the types that are most prevalent, you do see that many are Trojans, and that really kind of speaks to the spreading mechanisms at this point, which are largely social engineering attacks, because that's how people usually get Trojans onto computers, is social engineering attacks, and also, you know, web vulnerabilities. So yeah, it's kind of frightening to think that the percentages are that high.
Wow, what is PUP? P-U-P?
You know, I thought it was some sort of
potentially unwanted program.
Oh, there you go. Potentially unwanted program.
Oh, potentially unwanted program. Okay, got it.
They're all potentially unwanted. I'm not sure how that one differentiates.
I'll never work that out.
Some people might want it.
Yeah. Oh, so it's potentially.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Keyword. Interesting. Very interesting indeed. Wow, if you look at this, in organized crime, I don't know if you guys watch TED Talks, but if you go to TED.com, I didn't submit this link, but I'm just going there right now to quickly look at the reference. I forget who the speaker is, but he spoke to the worldwide GDP. Of the worldwide GDP, 15% is now organized crime, and their largest growth is in cybercrime. And it's not on the front page anymore. Anyway, if you do subscribe to their RSS, you'll definitely find it. It's a really, really, really fascinating one to watch. And if you look at that, and if you believe some of the things he says, I'm not really sure where he gets some of his stats from, but certainly is in line with the kind of growth that we're talking about in this article here. That's for sure. That's for sure. I'm gonna keep on the, we can keep on the bad news stuff just to keep everyone aware and an alert here. But don't worry, we're coming up with some good good stuff at the end of this show. Another one that Dennis submitted, new malware rewrites online bank statements to cover fraud.
Unbelievable.
No it's way.
And one of the as I read through it, this article has a link to the actual report, and one of the things I read through is that, you know, banks tend to watch large transfers of money, and so they kind of throw up some red flags. So some of the latest malware is actually stealing money rather than just emptying a bank account. It takes smaller amounts, but of course that's done over a longer period of time, and if anyone's watching their account, they'll catch on to this. So there's some malware that actually intercepts the bank statements and rewrites them to hide the fact that the money has been taken out. Just mind-boggling that someone would come up with code that sophisticated that apparently, at least in some cases, is effective.
Yeah, Takara is saying, why is everyone surprised? I am surprised the fact that they've gotten this far in terms of just in terms of complexity, or in terms of they're so sophisticated now to cover their own tracks. I mean, this is goes perfectly in line with the one-time password bypassing. And I guess next week's Security Now episode is going to focus on just the fact that the browser is a broken model for security. And what happened to one company, construction company, is that hackers ended up, first of all, knew that obviously which bank they were dealing with, and knew they couldn't bypass the one-time password security, just like the one we use with the YubiKey. So what they did instead is they hijacked a session once it was authenticated. So yes, you need the one-time password to authenticate in a browser, but if you have someone remotely controlling and being aware of what's happening in your computer, then behind the scenes they can launch a session because you've already got an authenticated session, right? And it's not like a transaction needs to be validated, although some banks do that. Some banks require you to validate your transaction. I know in our case, we have the a one-time password token. When we do EFT, for example, each transaction has to be authenticated as opposed to just the login. And then that's where, if we stick with the browser broker model as it may be, if we're going to stick with it, we're going to have to make sure that we go to a deeper level of authentication on a per transaction level rather than just authentication. And So what do you tell people with something like this? I mean, Dennis, you're more alert and aware of all these issues. And yes, we might be sharing some of the most scary stuff on this show sometimes. But what is it that you then recommend to our customers, to your family and friends, that they should be doing to be proactive on this front?
Well, at least for businesses, I actually am at the point of advocating that any financial transaction should be done on a computer that is dedicated to that purpose and possibly locked down so that it can only connect to that site. That's the only really secure way, particularly within a business setting. Any computer that is used for general browsing on the internet and also used for financial transactions creates quite a risk. And so I think that the best thing, and I do this myself actually with a virtual machine. That's a little bit advanced for a lot of people, but I have a virtual machine that basically, it's all it does. And that's if I do any online bank transfers, that's the machine that I use, and I don't use that machine to go to any other websites.
Okay. That's what I'm taking away from this. I'm just making a quick note here. Because that's exactly what we're going to do, is maybe not necessarily go to the extent of just a virtual machine, but I'm going to make sure that for banking security that we implement at least a whitelisting system via UTM, and possibly also go to the extent of having a dedicated virtual machine. But even just customers that have UTM, if the machines that have banking access had no access other than, you know, to the specific sites, then that would, you know, protocol control based. So you don't allow any protocol through the firewall except for HTTPS and HTTPS access only to one destination. Then you're effectively ensuring that even if your machine were hacked, that information doesn't get relayed to the would-be hacker. So kinds of ways that we could do this. I think this is something we can implement right away, as in today, in our own environment here.
Yeah, and if you do that, the only way that machine's ever going to be hacked is if someone has local access to it, because right. It just, you know, it doesn't provide any opportunity for malware to come in from the internet connection.
Yep. No, that's exactly what we're going to do. Thank you for that. On to the next one here that you also submitted, Dennis. Sophos beams up free Klingon antivirus app to Star Trek fans' PCs. What is this?
Well, you know, we have always have such serious, frightening stories on the security side. Basically, it's just a specialized version of an antivirus that Sophos has written, apparently in Klingon. Now, I'm not such a Trekkie that I speak Klingon or even believe that it's a real language, but apparently there are people who actually it is a structured language, and so you can't get your antivirus from Sophos in Klingon.
Well, Google translated to talk like a pirate on Pirate Day, right? So I wonder if Google translates to Klingon too, probably. That's funny. That's good. Now that's taking a pop culture iconic kind of thing and integrating with technology. I think that's cool. That's really cool. All right. Now this is big news. Right, Microsoft Security Essentials, Arthur, who's our ESET champion. Talk to us about how this might change the world for the better.
Yeah, well, that's definitely a good question, because it's from Microsoft, right. And all the reviews that we've seen have all been good. It's Microsoft knows the operating system probably better than anyone else.
Sure.
And so they should be able to do a good job with their antivirus. And so what I see happening, like, honestly, like, to be perfectly honest, is that, like ESET, Symantec, that their home user applications just kind of fade away. They might have, like, anti-spam features and firewall features that this doesn't have that people might want. But, like, in general, they just don't have purpose anymore.
What's the situation with like antitrust or monopoly with regards to that?
I haven't seen anything from about that.
That's a good point. Has anybody cried out about that yet?
There have been some complaints, but I think, you know, in the end, the consumer is going to win out on this one. Frankly, this should be an integral part of Windows. You know, it's such a problem. You know, we saw a couple articles back what a huge percentage of people have malware problems.
Sure.
I just think it's a responsible thing for Microsoft to provide this for free, and it should eventually be integrated into the operating system as part of it. And people shouldn't have to pay extra money when they buy an operating system to keep it from being infected.
Yeah. No, that's a good point indeed. I think that antivirus companies really have had a long run to get it done and get it taken care of in an effective and efficient way. And yet, obviously, it's still a very broken system for just about anybody. I mean, I know that our team prefers the ESET NOD32 product for the most part, because it is one of the, you know, smallest footprint, most efficient system that doesn't have a lot of false positives. But still, the amount of times I get people mentioning products that I just, you know, make me almost, you know, uncomfortable hearing some of the products that are installed because of how inefficient they are. This is something that needed to be done. It needed to be done. So it's still early, too early to tell from what I'm hearing. The verdict is not necessarily out yet because it is so fresh and so new. So we should keep a close eye on it. But it definitely does seem to make overall consumer-grade sense that if you're going to be paying Microsoft for an operating system, that consumers would expect it to be already somewhat protected. Definitely.
And this is available worldwide now? Because was it the beta that was only available in certain countries?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, even 64-bit versions. Not XP 64-bit, but Vista and Windows 7 in 64-bit. There we go. Right on. And a fast download, too. Only took like 10 seconds. Beautiful. That's not bad at all. I mean, it's only 8.6 megs. Not that it's going to work to install it here, but that's pretty small.
Yeah, it's actually a little bit smaller than NOD32 yet. So,
wow.
I'm actually installing it on a client's system on Monday. And see how that goes.
Right on. Sorry, I missed some of the comments here. Oh, by the way, we got a bunch of folks in the chat here today. Good to have you guys. Tom Canan, down from Mississippi. Good to have you. Takara says, a lot of consumers are unaware of any efficiencies. Yeah, you're absolutely right. They aren't aware. They just buy the product that's in their face most of the time. And that's the one that ends up being the one that weighs the system down the most, right? We all know the product we're talking about. Jim says, hey, they become very aware when you install Norton or Rogers Security and put on ESET. That's true. Yeah, they start realizing how much faster the system is once there's an alternative in place. That's right. Even AVG, the Pro and the Free Edition used to be pretty lightweight, and even they've become much more heavyweight in recent times. All right. So, next one here is Apple App's incredible success has many marketing implications. Was this from you, Chris?
Yep. Yeah, I was surprised when I saw the other day they've hit 2 billion apps downloaded already. I thought it was only a little while ago that they hit 1 billion.
Yeah.
Unless time's going so quick, I'm not realizing. But but that is a lot. And 50 million iPhones and iPod touches in the world. And the App Store just having the reach to all of them. So,
and 125,000 developers signed up. That really is amazing. It really is. Wow. I have to say, I'm not a big chunk of that 2 billion for sure. But nowadays, what do you do? what do iPhone people, I mean, I guess there are a lot of people who are just total iPhone addicts and maybe are like GDGT fans and you look to see what other people install as far as applications, but how can you possibly find a good nugget anymore? You know, there's just such a massive list. I guess if you're searching for something in particular or you're looking for sites that maybe feature apps that, you know, are good at things that you're interested in, I do have just a new app that I installed yesterday, and I have to quickly tell you what it is because I forgot what it was already, but I knew it was good. Oh, yeah, two installed yesterday. One was Dropbox for the iPhone, and that really is very, very cool. And then the other one is I was out all day yesterday, and I really wanted to get on live. So I installed the twit.am app, and I listened to it on 3G during the Security Now recording live. I didn't even know they had that, but I just decided to do a search for Twit and found it. They've never even talked about having it.
So it's their own app?
Yeah, it's their own app. It's called twit.am. So if you're out and about and you don't have your a broadband connection on, but you got an iPhone 3G or 3GS, the twit.am will use your 3G connectivity and stream the audio portion of Twit's live recording to you. And so I didn't have my headphones on. I had a family day yesterday. Since I haven't been with them for the last several weekends, I said, look, we'll go in the middle of the day, go to Marineland. So we went to Marineland in Niagara Falls yesterday, and I just had this in my pocket, and I just, you know, I don't like headphones. So I just, you know, had it sort of quietly listening in my shirt pocket.
And that was the day out.
And that was my day off, yeah. My boys thought, Daddy, what radio are you listening to? How can you listen to the radio out here? That was great. Apple driving force behind Intel's Light Peak. I think you submitted this one too, Chris. I haven't looked at it yet.
Yeah, it seems that Light Peak is going to integrate several ports together, so reduce wires, and they're aiming to do this on mobiles as well. I've not really looked into it enough yet, but it certainly sounded like a new step up from USB and FireWire.
So this is a whole new interface altogether that combines a bunch of them into one?
Yeah.
Well, actually, Apple wants to use it for everything, including Ethernet display, like to replace the VGA divide display port and all that stuff, FireWire, USB, yeah, everything, audio, everything over one port.
So so from a consumer's perspective, that has this has a potential to replace USB?
Yeah.
So instead of having three USB ports, you'd have, you know, three Light Peaks ports?
And also, actually has some of the cool features of FireWire as well. With the FireWire, you can do from one device to another. I forgot what it's called now.
Networking with it?
Yeah. yeah, I forgot the word. But like, say you can connect a hard drive over FireWire and then connect another hard drive to that hard drive. So it's like from
daisy
one
chain?
Device. Yeah, daisy chain.
Right?
And that's something you can do with Lightpeak as well. And so that's, and then has all those features, light speed, like as Jeff mentioned in chat. So it's pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah, Jeff says
and
I
mean,
at fiber speed, 100 meter distance, 10 gigabit plus. Wow. Wow. Imagine, yeah, networking vulnerability. Good point. Imagine what a denial of a service could do if it got into a 10 gigabit pipe. Ay, ay, ay. You could bring down all kinds of parts of the system. That's phenomenal. I can't believe I had not even ever heard of this, so I'm glad you brought this up. See, every time we do Nerdcast, I realize how much there is.
There's too much news now.
There is. How can you possibly keep up anymore? It's unbelievable. Impossible. The future of social networking, a concept investigation.
Yeah, this is mixed. One of something I've been interested in for years, I read about it in New Scientist a few years ago, augmented reality, where they talked about a windscreen on an aeroplane.
Right.
If it was dark or stormy, they could like just cut that off and show it as if it's a nice bright day for the pilots.
Right.
And so now it does seem to have caught up in hype a bit recently, but there's some really interesting ideas that do look like they should happen at some point. So you can see from the images.
This is scary.
Yeah.
In a way, this is scary. If I see people starting to hold up these devices up on my face, I'd be like, what are you trying to figure out?
Yeah, privacy issue.
But definitely huge privacy issues there, but definitely a very exciting technology. I mean, just if you're any place for the first time, I mean, so we're trying to grab a bite to eat yesterday, and I'm using, and now I'm finding even things like apps on the iPhone a little clunky. So I used Maps and I typed in pizza. Let's see what there is for pizza around here. And I found a place to go, and I go there and it's closed, you know? So I'm just thinking, oh, it'd be perfect to just have an augmented reality app where it just knows you're looking for pizza. And then you just hold up, you know, the camera around and says, okay, right there in 200 meters, right there in, you know, 300 yards or whatever. That definitely would be something that would, once again, bring a technology to the non-techie. And that's where Apple really has been successful at really getting the adoption of technology within the marketplace of non-techies by making it something that they can easily understand and find wowing and fun to use. That's for sure.
They've got a couple more examples further down, houses and that. The thing missing with Google Maps, I thought, was the reviews, because you see search for a place, but it still doesn't show you the reviews of it.
Right.
Which
That's right.
It's a shame.
Having reviews would be a good add-on. But I mean, that's just an add-on, right? Like Yelp.
It does works in the browser. You get reviews there if you search the maps, but for some reason Apple didn't include it.
Right. Right. I mean, that's where other places will come in very quickly. Like Yelp does that, of course, for food establishments everywhere, and now they're expanding that. And there's another company called Squidoo that sort of allows you to be a one-stop place for a reputation of a brand, that kind of thing. And then there's also now the Google SideWiki. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but that to me has just gone a little too far, I think.
I've tried it. I've not seen anyone.
Oh, really?
I've not seen any sites with it on yet.
See, as soon as I saw Google SideWiki, I just automatically assumed everybody's going to jump on that just because it's Google. It's not that it hasn't been done before. It's been done many times before. But when someone like Google does it, the spread of adoption becomes a whole lot faster, right? So it'll be interesting to see where that takes us. And I think the next article here that you submitted, also, Chris, Internet overtakes television to become biggest advertising sector in the UK.
Yeah, well, because we're doing the PPC stuff, nodes optimization, so I keep an eye on this sort of thing. And, I was surprised to see that UK spending so much on internet advertising.
UK has become the first major economy where advertisers spend more on internet advertising than on television advertising, with a record £1.75 billion online spent in the first 6 months of the year. Wow. Usually you guys are good with your grammar, but these guys are not very good with their grammar.
Guardians should be.
Guardians should be. This should be spent. Anyway, I make my share of a spelling mistake, so not that I don't know how to spell, but, you know, as you're typing or on your BlackBerry. And all right, this is a neat one as well. A Mashable article on making Twitter calls on Twitter with Yaya. Is that how you say it? Yaya?
I'm not the right person to answer that.
It's pronounced Jaja.
Jaja. Jaja.
I don't know.
Because if it was Yaya, that, you know, sort of has this, you know, what's really interesting is they say Ya a lot in South Africa, but also in South America. Ya means already, like Y-A, but pronounced Ya. But it's also used in the term of yes, and it's also German. So it's really neat how Yaya is now sort of becoming, or Ya itself is just ubiquitous everywhere. So web-based phone service Jaja, as Arthur says, has just released...
It's Yaya.
Is it Yaya? Okay. Has just released their Twitter calling feature in beta, giving participating members the ability to call each other free of charge by way of Twitter. The calling service works when a member tweets at call at Twitter name. The tweet will cause both phones to ring and the Twitters will be connected with other service share. That's cool. Can we give that a try?
Yeah, why not?
How does it know our number?
I think you got to sign up with Yaya first.
Oh, okay. You got to sign up for them first. Okay, that makes sense. Okay. Well, we're not signed up right now, so we can't do the demo right on the show unless we took the time to do it. But that's neat. Let's do a demo of that. I think that'll be kind of neat.
Yaya says it can save you up to 98% on your international phone calls as well.
Well, that's just that's exactly what I was just thinking. Is the reason this is a really good idea is because a lot of countries, you don't pay for incoming calls. You only pay for outgoing calls. In Canada, United States, we actually pay both ways. But now some providers are giving us inbound calls or inbound call plans. So this actually makes sense in a case like that where you have free inbound calling, and that way you have Yaya do the bridging, right? So both parties receive an inbound call. That actually makes a whole lot of sense.
That's such a strange concept to me.
I know.
Paying for someone to call you. You'd be like, don't stay on the phone too long.
Hey, the phone was invented here, but that doesn't mean we know how to do the billing, okay?
Yeah.
Be interesting. You know what I would be interested in finding out is for countries that call charge both ways, if the telcos actually make a lot more revenue. I imagine they do, because we are considered a much more expensive company. I remember when I lived over there in the UK, Chris, I was dumbfounded at how cheap everything was and yet how expensive the cost of living is, right? Over in the UK, all your luxuries are cheap, but your cost of living is expensive.
Yeah.
Whereas in a place like Bolivia, your cost of living is very, very cheap, but all your luxuries are super expensive, right? You've got the total opposite effect. And telephone service and cell phone service is one of those things. You know, someone working at McDonald's on minimum wage can afford an iPhone in the UK, right?
Yeah.
Whereas you got to be wealthy in a place in a South American country in order to be able to afford an iPhone. Very, very interesting. All right, so we're going to try that Yaya at call function or feature next time. Last article for today is Google wants to map indoors too. No way. This is a slashed out article. Talk to someone.
I was quite surprised when I saw this. Well, yeah, I only looked at the intro, but I thought it sounded fascinating.
Mapping your inside of buildings, malls, convention centers, and other points of interest. You don't get a "you are here" blinking dot yet, but they do promise to add one next year using Wi-Fi triangulation. At the introduction next month, Michello will only work in California, but they plan to expand to other major U.S. cities during 2010. Actually, this is something that I would have used quite often. I don't know if you've ever been downtown Toronto. Downtown Toronto has a underground network called PATH, and the PATH basically links a large segment of the downtown core where you can go from any one building to any other. And if you've been in downtown Toronto during the winter, you know exactly why that exists. So you can navigate much of the downtown Toronto without ever seeing daylight, but try to find your way around. If you're from there, what I sense is that people very quickly get to know the system and they know where they are and they know where to go, or they know some of the major buildings because there are lots of signs there. But if you're there for the first time, it is really, really difficult to find your way around. You're constantly looking at the map, and I'm not that geographically challenged. And I took my two little boys there, and I must have looked like the most lost wanderer ever in the PATH, just trying to find how to get to our destination. But that's where something like this would be perfect. If the whole PATH was outlined, and you could tell where you were at and where you wanted to go, that'd be brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
And for those who are geographically challenged, it would be an absolute godsend.
Yeah. Absolutely right. Takara, thanks for that link. I see that there. App Slappy. I'm going to check it out. I guess they do some top tens there. And make sure that I take a look at some of the... Yeah, there we go. Toronto.ca/path. There you go. You can find out all about... the map and everything is there too, right? I believe. It's just that when you're trying to find out where you are at that moment in time, it's sometimes a bit challenging. Have I missed anything? Anything else you want to share for today, folks? Hopefully I didn't miss any other good news in the chat from people who shared, but I'm glad you could join us. It's the 1st of October today. It's a very exciting month. Well, I do want to talk to you about a product that we're going to launch just as soon as we have our license agreement with OpenDNS in place, and that's called Family Friendly Net. And I'm very excited about this because this is for the first time going to give customers a managed internet filtering service. So families that, wow, you've got some serious dogs there, Dennis.
Oh, sorry.
So for families that want to have a degree of protection about information that may accidentally come across the internet at home, that's what this is going to be designed for. Filtering software out there like NetNandy, kids love that kind of stuff because they can easily find the workarounds. And the other part of the problem is that it's not necessarily very up to date. So our service is going to be a managed service with telephone support with a very inexpensive monthly fee to manage the whole thing on behalf of the home or small business. And looking forward to giving you more on that. Familyfriendlynet.com is the website. More stuff coming soon. And literally, all we're waiting for right now, the only thing we're waiting for is a license agreement from OpenDNS to come back and say, yep, go ahead. Because at the moment, their service is for free only, and you can't resell it. So we have to work through that hurdle. So looking forward to having OpenDNS work with us on that front. Please hurry up. We're ready.
Sounds great.
All right. Thanks very much, guys, for joining us today. We'll see you again next Thursday. Same time, same channel. Bye for now.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.
See ya.
A nerd. It's great to be a nerd. We know the truth is out there, but we'd have to leave our room. We are the nerds in your neighborhood. Polyester's a fashion statement, but there's more room on the beach for you, 'cause we're locked in our basement. It's great to be a nerd. It's great to be a nerd. We like to wear colors that do not appear in nature. It's great to be a poorly dressed, fashion last, or tricking, role playing, 90 pounds, one without PC skin, puckering, underfed genius. Yes, it's great to be a nerd.